Hi, Ryan.
Hello, Rachel. How are you? You're stuttering already. Come on, Rachel. We've got to keep the yumlings listening to us as much as possible. How are you? I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
You sound so ecstatic. I am also ecstatic. Oh, everybody, you know why you're here. You're here for some discussions of a science fiction show, specifically Star Trek.
And you can tell what it is by my level of excitement.
Yeah, Rachel's off the chain, as people say. Because we're here to talk about Star Trek Discovery, and we're Yum Yum Podcast. And if you know Star Trek Discovery, you know why we're called that. And if you don't, read a book, kids. Grab your local library, grab it physically by its shoulders, shake it until it gives you the history books. That's what I was asking when I was watching this Discovery episode. But the history books will fall out. It will open itself and you'll see the yum yum moment right there on the page. Because it was a historic day when Yum Yum hit the screen. When Commander Nandi, God bless her, salute to Commander Nandi. What a hero. She said, Yum Yum. Sexily.
Please, let's just get this over with.
Well, okay, we are talking about episode 7, But to Connect.
There is an ellipsis at the start of the title, which is why.
Oh, yes, yes. That's why I paused, not just because I was scrambling to try and remember the title.
Would you approach do you a favor? I think you can guess. You have to speak to that. Make the argument for diplomacy.
It was difficult enough bringing all of these worlds together. I have to remain impartial. But I believe you can convince them.
Tensions rise as representatives from across the galaxy gather to confront the threat of the Dark Matter Anomaly. Zora's new sentience raises difficult questions.
That's all it does.
She's a new species.
She's a new life form, at least.
New species.
New life form.
Okay. Oh, she's a new life form. That suggests
little life forms, little life forms. Du-du-du-du-du-du-du.
Anything
remember,
but to think about
remember,
this.
Remember Data? I like Data. He was a fun character. Mm. I miss him so much. Oh, history, relationship, well, Rachel.
I never want to see him again, thanks to Picard.
Nemesis didn't help. Now let's go through our background with this episode. Since we are rewatching it now, means that when we saw it that first time, we probably had a reaction to But to Connect.
Yeah?
What was yours? Do you even remember this episode?
I forgot that it was a whole episode.
What did you remember then?
I remembered them having a meeting and Burnham and Book being on opposite sides and him stealing the spore drive.
The portable spore drive thing, yeah. Yeah. So you remember the meeting parts of this?
Yeah.
The thrilling meeting.
I remember that Zora was declared sentient at some point. But I didn't think that they were whole plots on their own. And then I was like, oh, wait, this is the whole episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're keeping it simple in this one.
It's not too busy. No action. Straightforward.
No action scene in this.
It didn't make me angry.
Is that how you felt at the time or just now?
Both, because I passively watched it and just forgot about it once it was done. And that's been my experience both times.
That's great to hear. You're getting on the path of liking season four.
Fuck off. What's your history, Ryan?
Well, I remembered the AI becoming alive and David Cronenberg getting a whole episode to himself, and I really enjoyed that because I love David Cronenberg.
Got an extra paycheck.
He got some extra money. I'm glad he's financing his film somehow, and or just getting new cool sunglasses to wear at the film festivals. Look up, I can't remember if it was the Cannes Film Festival, but there was a recent film festival earlier this year where David Cronenberg wore some... Yeah, David Cronenberg. Well, they can look at the release date of this episode. He wore some epic sunglasses, and I adore that. That's what I remember. I don't really remember too much about...
David Cronenberg's sunglasses this episode?
No, I remember him collecting a check. The David Cronenberg side of this is what I recalled. If you had to ask me, when was the episode where Book turned and he ran away with Tarka and Michael and all that had a meeting, I wouldn't know. Because season four has a lot of meetings.
Oh, they get a lot of use out of that green screen set.
Well, it's not a green screen anymore. They have those TV screen things behind them, the AR walls. But what I was going to say is a lot of storylines in this season in particular are ones where you could sum it up by going, that could have been an email. That could have been an email. How I feel about it now, I'm going to use this as a way of going about how I feel about it currently. I really like Tarka. Not the character, but the performance behind said character. And why I like it is because he's improving upon himself as the character. He's getting better. He's vibrant in his performance. There's an energy and an oomph there. When we look at Star Trek, you often see the first two seasons, the actors and the writers and the general production is figuring it out. Then in the middle section, they've figured it out, they're improving upon themselves, and they've hit their stride. And then a lot of the time, not always, but most of the time, you get to the final season or two, and they're tired.
They've
run out of steam, and they're over it. They're not improving as much. You will still have the great episode and the great performances, but there is a level of, not even just checked out, but just, we've really got the water from this well.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about a lot of this episode is Tarka is the shining example of what everyone else is lacking. That performance, that guy is, he's honing into something where there's nothing in the script there. He's got very little to work with in the script, but he as a performance is shining a light on what's weak about the episode as a whole to me, which is this was aggressively a sigh of an episode where people were just going, yeah, I said my lines. Such as Paul Stamets. That opening scene with him and Adira talking to one another, I was looking at it and I just said to myself internally, huh, both of them are really not good at delivering these lines today. That's the best take they got. It's watching caricatures of these actors playing these characters. And it's weird because Adira has barely been here. That's how I feel about it today. I've been indifferent, and today I just looked at it and said, they are tired. And not as tired as previous ones. This is them just, it's a Tuesday. Start of the week, I'm getting there, but also I don't really want to be here. And then you got the actor behind Tarka, and he does want to be there. He's doing it more than just for a paycheck or just to be in Star Trek. That's why I love pairing him against David Cronenberg, who is only here to get a paycheck. He doesn't give a fuck, and you can see it. I admire the both of them because they're on the extremes, while the rest of the cast and the production are in the middle. They're just meh. There were so many moments where the music would just kick in out of obligation to kick in. Like, oh, well, this scene, just smack some keys on the piano tenderly, and that will fill it in, I guess.
Yeah. We'll use this stock We need a few more seconds. Let's just loop the same thing.
It is very plug and play.
Mm-hmm.
Just put this element here. Move the camera to the left there. Make sure the music is playing here. What type of music? I don't know. Just some light music, I guess. This character will smile. Make sure to have that shot. This character will raise their eyebrows. Make sure to have that shot.
Yeah, that's enough coverage. Let's
that's
see.
Good. Guys, we did it. Congratulations. We all did well.
Woo!
Today.
We're shooting during COVID, so we were limited in the number of folks that we could have on set. Just behind the scenes, we were struggling a little bit to make it feel full. And then, you know, VFX coming in and helping us out with the great shot where we're looking down and you see all the people down there. It just, it was really a team effort to be able to pull that off at all.
The DMA is the central threat. Last episode, we found out more information about the DMA. We started here with Zora, the computer. I almost wanted to call her Zori Bliss. Zora, the computer, has the information on the coordinates of where this originated from, but she's refusing to give it up because she has her own code of conduct that she's following, which brings David Cronenberg and co in. But Michael's too busy to worry about that right now.
She's told not to.
Yeah.
She's told that this diplomatic meeting is more important.
And let's get into that important diplomatic meeting. I know that Star Trek, even when it's at its best even, is people just talking in rooms. And I want to commend this episode for not having an action sequence in it. I did not miss the action. I was not yearning for it at any point. I was so happy that we didn't have a kung fu fight or people screaming. It was just lots of people talking in rooms.
I was
fine with that.
Wholeheartedly expecting Burnham to fall to her knees when she watches Book's ship
leave at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even that's the highest amount of action-y tension is when she transports down to try and stop him.
They don't even go that far.
No, they withheld it. And the biggest example of the withholding here is Michael's plot is her and a bunch of other people, characters we've met and characters we haven't, standing and just talking one after the other about the crisis at hand. And what is the best method to approach it? Let's vote on this. Everybody makes their case and we vote. And along the way, we learn what everybody's standing is when it comes to this matter. That we learn that Book is more swayed towards the violence. Tarka, we get his backstory. We get a part of his backstory and why he's motivated to do what he does. The butterfly people are here, and they use themselves as an example of why we should go for peace, which I do appreciate, even if I have to remember the way they got here was by one of the most embarrassing openings of a season I've ever seen for Star Trek. Remember how they brought down Grudge the Cat?
I do.
The Vulcans come at it from a very
She's
Vulcan
acquiring.
Approach. Yes. Humanity is here, and they are militant as usual, suspicious and paranoid. All of these things that we know of these characters rang true here. And I want to say, good job, guys. You were consistent for, I would say, the most part when it came to why everybody was coming at it the way they were.
Yeah, it wasn't badly described or communicated, and it wasn't repeated too often.
Mm-hmm.
It was just clearly established from the get-go, and then they continued, which I appreciated, because other times when it's situations like this, they go back and remind you of what they told you in the first act, like you've already forgotten. But it trusts that you remember these people are pro, these people are
against. I was just thinking about there is a great contrast between this and the other plot when it comes to my appreciation of this. Because I do appreciate things here. I will preface, though, I found this to be fucking boring. This could have been a scene, could have been an email, could have been something that they told the Discovery crew happened so that they could go on a mission or an adventure or something that furthers the season-long arc rather than a whole story in an episode. But to appreciate something here in comparison to the other plot, which is Taka and Book are making their case for why they want to do the things they do. And clearly there is an emotional bias from both of them. But the direction for those actors, as well as how the scenes are composed with the editing and music, did not strawman or overplay the hand when it came to how they are clearly biased because they are people grieving or have a personal vendetta. We, the audience, understand that, but when they were making their points seemed somewhat valid, unlike in the B plot, where when people are making their points, you know it's invalid because of how the show is portraying it and how those characters are so clearly emotionally compromised, where you would not buy anyone taking them seriously, even if they have some serious points to make. Here, I thought they handled that quite well. What do you think about that?
I mostly agree with that, but I want to sort of try and tease something out, which is that this plot has the appearance of doing things that we've asked Discovery to do, but it's not in the form that we want it. It is a diplomatic focused episode, focused plot. Of we need to discuss this problem that we're having and come up with a solution.
Yes.
But it's the whole episode.
Yes.
And we don't get a solution. Instead, we get, like, the fragmentation. They get to have it both ways.
We get a solution that's immediately undermined so that we can have drama for next episode.
Yes.
Because we didn't have drama in this episode.
No, not enough.
Not in that high-stakes sense. The biggest drama we get from the A-plot
almost died except Zora.
But what I mean is with the A-plot, the drama that we got is the rift forming between Michael and Book.
Yes.
That is what we had. And to end it, we make sure that rift is huge because now Book has, for all intents and purposes, betrayed her. And has gone off to use a super weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And he will. That will happen. We'll see that in the next couple of episodes play out. But relatively, this is dramaless. And you are completely right. They get to have it both ways. Where we spend a whole episode wringing our hands and going, oh, this and this, and we're talking. We finally come up with a solution together for two... just be undermined immediately so that way we can tease the audience with what we'll get up to next time on Star Trek Discovery.
But also because as a show, it was never going to pick
peace.
Unity, peace, and diplomacy as the approach to the central conflict of the season.
They wait for the end for that to work. We have to see it be stalled and halted by not outside forces, but internal. See, I like those Star Trek episodes a lot. Now, again, this isn't a golden rule. There's many Star Trek episodes that play around with this stuff. Voyager, especially, Deep Space Nine, especially, as well, plays around with this. But I like those Star Trek episodes where they go for the peaceful, logical Starfleet approach, or the Federation approach, and it does not work, and they have to figure out a different method to achieve the same goal. Such as everyone loves the Darmok episode, where that's basically the same thing. Where it's like they want to form a relationship with this race, but they cannot understand each other. And so Picard and a captain are thrown down on a planet and have to learn from one another to understand each other. And then that's a form thing. See, that was from an external thing. It wasn't just... And then the other side of that plot was the other characters on the ship figuring out how difficult language is and trying to de-escalate violence that is quickly escalating because of that misunderstanding between... See, I'm having such a great time just talking about that. Here, it is a lot of people bickering, and then they decide, let's do it, only for somebody within that to say, no, we're not actually going to do it that way. Forget the peaceful option until the end of the season, where we can pat ourselves on the back, look at the audience and say, this is the theme of this season, see how we executed it, mm-hmm. and then... wink and say, watch next season when we're going to do this exact same formula again. And it's a tiresome thing, because if this was an episode in a show that did this did this in a more cohesive manner, would we even be questioning it?
No, because we just would have engaged with it and been along for the ride and seeing characters and enjoying them having this journey and seeing how they face these particular challenges.
Even if I was invested in this more, and if it was doing the things we're saying more, and if they still presented it the exact same, this is the exact same episode, this would still be tedious to me. There are episodes of Star Trek, old and new, where they do this, where they're people just jabbering away about Prime Directive and Starfleet values and peace and all of that. And it's boring because there is no escalations of the stakes or the plot until the very end for this one.
And it's like, tune in next week.
You could argue that, yes, there is throughout. Like, Book is wavering to and from. You got Tarka luring him in. You got Tarka even rattling the cage and offering opposition. That is valid. I'm not saying that doesn't exist. I needed it to be more incisive. I needed it to be more sharp with what it was doing. This is very much baby's first politics, as we've seen with Star Trek Discovery before.
Yes.
Because... We're talking
they
about...
They want to make this show as easily digestible as possible. And for us, that makes it feel like baby food. It's like, there's the elements of a meal here, but it's all mushed together.
Yeah.
It's a puree of a show.
It's not an easy choice. And I've often boasted about the story of Star Trek and our particular story on Discovery, you actually see us having to fight for this better future that we find ourselves in. You see us having to confront each other, to rub each other the wrong way for the ultimate end of the greater good. And I love that you see that played out in this really interesting, intriguing way.
Star Trek has a very interesting, let's say, relationship with its space politics side. You get shows like Deep Space Nine that delve into it a lot deeper, and heck, even Enterprise gives it a go at points as well. And the original series has a lot of space politicians and bureaucrats, and when they dig their teeth into that, they show that the idealisms of Starfleet and of the Federation are very difficult. There's lots of hurdles you have to go through and lots of people with different opinions, and it's a challenge. While in, say...
It's not easy to keep it all together.
It's not easy to make decisions. And we see in, say, TNG and Voyager, and a lot of their time in the original series, they often opt out of that because it's just quicker to get to the bone, to cut through the meat and get to the bone by just having our characters do an adventure and get to it already. And that is why I'm struggling with this episode's story here, where they're wanting to do that Deep Space Nine thing, they want to do that even Enterprise thing, and they want to delve into space politics, but they don't have any real grit and opinion on what politics is. It is just people talk in rooms and put their hands up, and the people who put their hands up are on the right side, and the music swells, and Michael smiles at everybody who puts their hands up. It isn't...
They don't have anything to say.
Yes, it isn't Babylon 5, say, where you have a character who's doing the right thing and they're smiling, but it's doing the right thing for their own means. And if they can't get it that way, then they vote no with a smile on their face and stuff of that variety. Again, watching Babylon 5 at the same time as this is not helping, because that show is all about space and politics and has a lot more nuances to that topic. I do want to say that this is a better version of space politics than that previous one where they were getting the Navarre people to join or to figure out something where they
even
had...
the Last Earth episode.
Or, oh, well, any episode is better than People of Earth. Ugh, yuck. Is there anything else to describe about this? Because we're talking about this as a general thing in the air rather than, say, a moment, a character beat, heck, even a scene that happened here. Because that is an issue that I do have, which is I look at this as just a big smudge of what this is rather than individual components that I can pick apart and look at.
I stick with my puree analogy.
Taka is a character that was promised not to be in this season. We were promised that there would be not a supervillain who has a weapon who will destroy the fate of the galaxy and of the status quo. We were promised that we wouldn't get that. And, well, here he is. Tark is here. And but I still stand by my statement that the actor is very good.
Yes.
I was charmed by...
I support your support.
You support my support. The writing needs to be better, but when he was on screen, I found him the most compelling, because I wonder if this is a thing. Is it because I don't know his tics as an actor? Because when I'm watching Discovery, I'm looking at those actors and their quirks and their tics now.
It's like, they're doing their thing. That's their thing.
Like,
they're doing it.
Doug Jones will always now be stroking that pin on his chest in every scene. He's doing it in every scene. Mm-hmm. The guy who plays Stamets is always...
The head movement for Stamets gets me a lot.
The constant, like, raised eyebrows and the bugging out eyes. We've already talked about the actor who plays Adira. They often do the stiff at the back of the neck, tucking my chin into my throat and bugging out eyes and pecking forward thing. I don't know what that's about. Like, Hugh always smiling and nodding. Is this because Taka, since he's an actor in this series who's new, I appreciate this performance because I haven't grown so accustomed to the tricks of the trade he's using?
I think it helps.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think it helps.
I mean, I don't know what Book's tics are as an actor, and yet I'm tired of him by the end of season 3 and now season 4. I don't know what it means. His is more writing than anything else. I still think that actor's good, but he's writing. So, Taka's motivations, do you want to walk us through what they are and your overall thoughts on it?
He wants to get home. He was held captive by the Emerald Chain.
Remember them? Remember how Michael just shot Osira in the head and the Emerald Chain fell apart instantly?
Well, it was over the course of a couple of months.
Yeah, yeah, like I said.
We got a montage.
We remember that? That's how that works. Go on.
Yeah.
They had ministers. Go on. Remember the Emerald Chain Parliament system?
Do you want me to explain this or not?
Yeah. You just mentioned the Emerald Chain and I had the bitch. Go on. I keep my lip zipped.
I don't believe that for a second, my love. And while he was being held captive, he made a friend. And we know that he's serious about it being a real friend. Because earlier in the episode, he explained the difference between a friend and friendly to Book. So we know that he's serious about this being a friend. And they had a plan that if they ever got separated, they would find their way to a different dimension to meet up with each other. And they called that home.
Yeah. Well, there's a little bit more nuance there. They have figured out scientifically how to identify different universes. So it's not just the mirror universe. We've found out through quantum signatures or quantum something or other that there are numbers that we can determine to go to these said universes.
And it needs an extraordinary amount of power, which is why Taka wants the DMA. He wants the power source that's within it so that he can use it to jump to this idealized universe.
And that makes him rather fascinating when it comes to... Well, not fascinating. Well, okay. Why would Book align himself with somebody who outright says that he's not here for the revenge or the betterment or safety of others, but he is simply here to do it for himself? While Book's whole attitude is to get revenge as well, but not just for himself, but for what he perceives to be those who have suffered, which are the dead, as well as to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yeah, it's just... He's like, Taka can help him do what he wants to do.
Yes.
They want the same thing, but for very different reasons.
Yeah.
And it's easier for him to actively make the wrong choice and align with Taka
than
it is to sideline himself. And trust the process.
To trust the process because it's failed so many times before. I understand that. And I'm to critique my own viewership. When I was first looking at this, I just scoffed. I just went, okay, yeah, we need Book to align himself with this bad guy because we're making Book do this stuff.
We need a point of view character wrong side of the tracks.
That's a great way to look at it. And I didn't even look at it like that. I looked at it from the cynical eye simply of they are making Book do this thing and they're not really holding him accountable for his own purpose and sense of action and agency in it. It's the charming bad guy wooed me into it, but they do hold him a little bit more accountable than I'm giving credit for. And that's what I'm saying. In this watch, I am seeing that it is far more of Book making his own decisions and hiding it behind the idea that it's Tarka's allure. He knows better than that. It's obvious. Mm-hmm. And you can tell
he wouldn't have made it as a courier.
Yeah, and...
Book
knows better than that, but he's fooling himself and he's fooling others behind that so he can get away from that accountability that will eventually come to him in the end of the season. Because in the end of the season, he gets taken away and he's going to face the consequences of his actions. A thing that I also think is fascinating about Taka when it comes to his background is... It is informing him of what he needs to do in the current. And this is one of the few times since... I'm going to lay my claim now. Is this the first villain proper in Discovery. I'm not counting T'Kuvma, because T'Kuvma has had this, but he was in one episode, where we have a very, very, very clear understanding of why they're doing the things they're doing. Because Control was this mystery nebulous thing where we barely understand. In this episode, they even said Control never had feelings. It's like, didn't it? And
Leland as Control definitely did.
Yeah, and then Osira, we had no understanding of why she was doing the things she was doing other than, I'm evil, and I'm an evil witch, and then they minorly talked about her backstory, but not really. Here, we've only met Taka for one or two episodes, and we're given a clear window into his mind and why he is doing everything he's proceeding to do. And I think that makes him one of the more captivating antagonists Discovery has had, even if he's arrived at a period in the show in which what he is unwelcomed. Because a lot of the Discovery fans, as well as people who aren't, did not welcome Taka because we are tired of the supervillain genius arrogance who has a super weapon. We're tired of it. But again, I'm being very nice here. I appreciate, again, that they even bothered to let us, the audience, in on the psychology behind the actions of our antagonist. What do you think about that? Like, think back about what we've gone through with Discovery. Is he the one where we get it from the start very clearly? Because Lorca, he was a mystery. Cole, the Klingon, we never knew him and what he was about. Again, Control, a mystery thing that we never got a clear comprehension on. And Osira, she came in as a character in like the last four episodes of the show. What do you think?
It's sad. It's sad that, you know, a couple of lines in one episode and the fact that that's followed through on is enough.
Because it's sad because it wasn't enough for the other three seasons.
Yeah, like they didn't.
They couldn't be bothered.
They didn't want to do it. They didn't want to do it. That's it. And it just sort of makes me, you know, I don't know if this is an actual phrase or not, but it's like, crumbs are a feast to a beggar.
Yeah, we're feeding on crumbs. That's why a lot of people gravitated toward T'Kuvma as a villain. In that first episode of Discovery, they gave us so much about him where we go, okay, I don't agree with what he's doing, but I know why he's doing it. There's an ethos there. There's a motivation there. There's something backing him. Same with Taka. In between those two, nothing when it comes to these villains. And I want to ask you this. When it comes to Discovery, they've had a villain problem for the whole run. Taka comes in, you were there as well. No one was welcoming of this character. No one really wanted this.
No, especially because we were promised to not have a character like the archetype that Taka is.
Yeah. We were promised that, but even those who weren't in the knowledge of that promise, there was a lot of pushback on, oh, here we go, another one.
Again, the same roundabout. Discovery does the same things with the same problems every season. And I'm just tired and bored of it. Like, I don't even know how to talk about this show anymore because I swear we've talked about all of these problems.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, this is bit before the midpoint in the show, and every fucking season there's an episode that's dead in the water,
mm-hmm,
because it's after the initial setup but before the mid-season finale.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just padding time.
If we detonate this weapon, we cannot control the message we're sending. If we wait for the coordinates, we can make first contact peacefully. carefully, and then we can determine intent before we act. It is not the flashiest idea, but it is what's most in line with Starfleet and Federation ideals.
I really want to think about this. With the type of shows that you and I watch, like, say, Buffy, or even Breaking Bad, they will have this season-long bad guy or bad guys. The big bads. And I know even for those shows, especially, say, Buffy, there came a point where you go, okay, I know the formula.
But it gets tiresome.
But then they'll give you a really good villain, and you go, oh, well, okay, you know what? It works for...
I'm not mad at it this time.
Or you go, you know what? The formula works for a reason. And I want to know, do you think Discovery has poisoned the well when it comes to villains so much that even if they did present us with a good villain, we would accept it?
Would we accept it if they did it well? I don't know. One thing that I do want to point out is that the show doesn't fully treat Taka like a villain.
They give him a minor, very minor, sympathetic note because he's operating from a place of love and grief. But he's still a villainous character.
Yeah, like, he's still working against Burnham. And Burnham is our central hero.
And he's doing it in a destructive manner. It's not as if he's doing it in a non-destructive manner. He is making super weapons and firing them, and he's a mad scientist.
But I feel like the writers genuinely believe that Tark is not a villain because he's not the villain.
Because they didn't write one this season. It's an anomaly. But for all intents and purposes, it is. But
makes me wonder if I even would recognize it if they did.
I haven't encountered this really with a television show before. Because usually in these shows, they will somehow swing around and give me some villain that I find captivating enough. Or I go, okay, I'm in. Even if it's on the most cheesy, campy level. Killjoys is an example of that. Killjoys to me as a show had piss poor villains. Piss poor. And then they came around to a point where they gave us the evil version of our main character, where that actress got to play a very over-the-top, camp, cheesy, evil princess type
classic
character.
Mirror
classic
universe.
Well, yeah, classic villain type. And I wouldn't even say that's a great villain, but it was a welcome because, oh, this is an angle that they're taking. Discovery has done something that I haven't seen, like, I really haven't fathomed before, which is I don't think they can ever present to me an antagonist in this series that I will ever be interested in. We, as we go through this rewatch, this is the most interested I ever been in Taka because I'm really looking at it and going, the writing isn't there. It's just this actor giving me something more so than the other villain actors were allowed to do. And they've given him
managed to do. It's not just that he is allowed to do it.
Oh, yeah. The actress of Osira was terrible. That's something to note.
It is, like, the actor is working hard to make the most of what they're given.
Right. And again, we know why they are doing the things they're doing. While Discovery is always, if not mostly, kept the villain stuff as a mystery to reveal over time.
Which is what they're doing with the DMA stuff.
Which is what they're doing with the DMA stuff. Taka will get more of his backstory, but we've got it here. And we go, okay, you've given me the tools.
It builds from here.
Yeah, you give me the toys to play with for the rest of this season. Cool. And that is something. But yeah, I don't know. Even if they did give me, because I often think back on
I just can't imagine them doing it. I think that's one of the reasons why I have trouble answering that question is because I don't know what that would look like in this show enough to really ponder it. I hope that if they did manage it, that I would have an open enough mind to potentially enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But that would definitely only be on the rewatch, because during the first watch through, I would just be waiting for them to fuck it up.
I'm not going to say it, but I will say this. Context is really important here.
For Kings.
You said it. I think if they grabbed, say, a villain from Voyager, say they grabbed the guy from Year of Hell, they grabbed Kurtwood Smith's character, and put him in this show verbatim, this is what he is, I would probably think he's a crap villain because of the context that Discovery has given me when I have a relationship with these antagonists.
Yeah.
And because I like
them. And we've seen them do that with villains and with particular characters when they're transplanted into these shows.
Yes.
And specifically into Discovery.
Mm.
It doesn't work.
It makes me question what is a good villain anymore. Because I know that Kurtwood Smith's character in Year of Hell is a great villain, one of the best, in one of the great baddies of Voyager and of Star Trek. Or even if you go to a campy degree, like the guy who steals Data in TNG in Most Toys, that's a silly, over-the-top character, but I love that guy. I love that performance. I love the conversations. And I think if you put him the exact same way, script-wise, into Discovery, I think he's one of the worst things ever because of how Discovery has tainted my views on what makes a compelling antagonist in a way that I don't believe that they will ever be able to make one anymore. And this isn't even besmirching, as we keep saying, these poor actors, they bring them in and you might as well just not do it. When they said they weren't going to have an antagonist in this season, which is a lie, I actually was looking forward to that because it's always this unnecessary thing they have in each season. The real leftover piece of garbage, Saturday morning cartoon villain that is just here to check off the list. And when I heard that they weren't going to do it, I was like, yeah, great. You're just wasting time every season when you do. But here we are. We're talking about Taka more than anything else in the episode because he's minorly interesting, which makes him stand out of anything else in this episode, because everything else in this episode is meh.
Yeah. It happens.
Book betrays Burnham, and I just go, oh, yeah, of course he did, because we have to keep escalating the story.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Taka needed a ship.
Because he's a super genius. You know who else is a super genius? Zora. Or, you know, Zora the computer?
Yeah.
She's alive.
Yeah.
She's alive. We've known this for a whole season now, but the show only just caught up. Thank you, guys. You caught up. It took you a long time, but you figured it out. The ship's alive, and we need to actually deal with that because that's scary. It's scary that the computer is making decisions like this on its own, and it can just disobey and withhold important information and has panic attacks.
You figured it out. Get a gold star.
Let's just,
or a murder button.
Let's just skip past the usual diatribe we would have of this could have been a good idea. We've already said this. Listen to our episodes over the last season or two about the computer becoming alive. You could do something with this. They wasted it. We've gone over that. Let's just go through what they did give us in this episode, which is a bunch of the crew sit in a room and discuss with David Cronenberg, who's there to be the judge, jury, and executioner of this. They're discussing, they're having a meeting about what we should do about the computer that's now become alive. Are they alive? There's a lot of philosophical musings on this.
Have they achieved full sentience? What happens? Everybody is emotionally charged except David Cronenberg because he's just reading lines.
No. His character's impartial, Rachel. That's why.
Yeah, it's a choice. It's a choice that they're making. And they determine that Zora has not achieved sentience as a fully integrated AI, but largely because they have a subconscious that the crew can just watch.
She didn't even know it was there.
Yeah, the crew can just open up and watch. Zora's subconscious. She's a new life form.
Reminds me of Voyager.
Which means that she doesn't come under the existing regulations.
Yeah, and she has a set of values. She's not there for just self-preservation. She's not there to actually harm anyone. It did remind me of Voyager a bit with the Doctor and his evolution over time. And you said, oh, they can look at the subconscious. And you were saying it with this point of derision in your voice.
Just that they can open up a file explorer.
That's what they could do with the Doctor. Remember in my favorite episode of Voyager where those aliens are looking at the Doctor's dreams and they're interpreting them as real? And then the Doctor has to play pretend and make it that, you know, the aliens, when they meet up with him in real life, actually he comes across as this magnificent hero captain. That's a similar notion, but that was, guess what that was? A whole episode. That was a whole episode on a character that we've known for a very long time. And it was a neat little piece of character work for that guy who was probably one of the most well-defined characters of that series. And the fact that they could find another way of filling in that guy even more so was stunning. Hence, it's one of my favorites. But
it's a sci-fi idea that's applied in a very unique context to a character that is well-developed, well-written, and well-performed.
And all of it's tailored specifically to that character in a way that it couldn't be for others. And it's funny. Okay, so what really steams my clams about this...
Oh, boy.
...is I have to accept this, the way it is executed, I have to remove two words from my brain. Do you know what they are?
Common sense?
No. We've said it a lot. Star Trek. Discovery and modern Star Trek often do the balancing act and walk the line of, you have to accept that this isn't the Star Trek of your youth anymore. And guys, we know the Star Trek of your youth. See how well we're doing it?
Oh, God.
It's a real dissonance there. Because I would wholeheartedly be on board for Star Trek Discovery more if they just went one way or the other way more. Like, if they just stopped trying to be this Star Trek show and they just were their own weird sci-fi show that's in the Star Trek universe, fine. They're 930 years in the future. It's a completely different landscape. Do it, cowards.
Go for it. Do something.
But then they keep doing things, referencing things, and trying to look at me in the eye and go, no, we are like the Star Trek that you know. And then they have a plot like this, in which they approach it in the least Star Trek way possible, and then shove in the Star Trek ways as well.
They try and have it both ways.
Why I'm saying this is, everybody in this is so emotionally biased that even if they are making those compelling points, those logistical points, they are moot They are moot points because we know that they're wrong. Like, Stamets, being the for all intents and purposes, the engineer character, saying, okay, us having a computer that's alive would bring about these problems. Bam, 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 bam. He's saying it, though, with that obvious fear in his voice, obvious persecution in his tone, and obvious bias.
I'm scared of the supercomputer. That's why I have concerns about it. Not that those concerns are really fucking valid.
Yes.
And you brought up something that I didn't even bother to think of, which is the fact, you know what? Really creepy to have a sentient computer that has access to all of the data and all of the cameras.
Yeah, it films everything and keeps it in there. Yeah, yeah, that's a thing. Privacy issues, but
infinite storage.
Yeah, it's a sphere. Didn't you know? Mm-hmm. I want to like this more. Because on paper, this sounds excellent. You have basically a tribunal, or you have a meeting, you have an expert come in, they're the judge and they're the unbiased person. We have our crew of characters who all have their stance on the matter. But I really just need, you know who I needed in this? I'll give Star Trek Discovery this. It makes me appreciate characters from previous Star Trek series more than I have, because it's making me examine why they worked the way they did instead of why they didn't. Geordi LaForge would have been great in this episode, because Geordi was really good at being the guy...
everybody's friend.
Well, yes. No, that's important. He was very good at running through the problems from a neutral point, where he would go, okay, Captain, here's this, this, and this. But he also had that nice layer of warmth and humanity. If he was saying this about Data, he would be able to run through all the problems about Data from a very neutral stance. He would go, okay, so Data can take over the computer. This is an engineer.
He knows how to be factual. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have emotions. He knows that he needs to remove those emotions, be factual, and apply logic and problem solving to solve a situation and resolve a crisis.
And he can pair that with his own views. He can say all of that and go, but Captain, here is what I think personally. I know Data, I know this, I know that. But him saying that and his emotions, his friendship, his connection is not invalidating the facts. And so Picard
can
sit there
together to create further strength.
And so Picard can sit there and go, well, I'm having to make the, and this is a capital C Captain Picard thing with him, which is weighing the obvious logistical points with the emotional points that my crew and myself are mulling over. Which one will I go with? Guess what, guys? He often goes with the emotional points, but from a very logical stance. And that's how you do it. Now, you can argue they don't have to do it that way because that's how Star Trek used to do it. But the way they do it, to me, is very boring because you just... watching these actors spend so much energy on a character, on an entity we don't know anything about.
Connection. Love. This is who she is. This is why she kept the coordinates from us.
I do like one thing about this AI plot, which is David Cronenberg, in a non-ironic sense, his character has a very good, nice little... Here's a little lesson of this, children, which is he already made his decision, and if Stamets was still unsure, he would have transferred him to another ship because he's the problem, not the ship's computer. That felt accurate to me. That felt very Star Trek to me. The way he dispensed that... I could see that being done in another Star Trek show. See, that's how good it can be. Within this plot, they had a moment of shining light where even you, when you were sitting next to me, you had this look on your face of, that, well, yeah, that makes sense. Like, this works. And it's so unfortunate that the stuff leading to it was just a lot of characters raising their eyebrows up, or everybody looking at Paul Stamets with this look of, no, Paul, you're being so unreasonable right now. When he's really not, but the way he's saying it is unreasonable. Like, the voice, his tone, his face, the way he's walking into rooms saying, play music, and then saying, group hug, everyone, because he wants to whisper about how the computer would want to kill them all. See, that's ludicrous. But the idea isn't. Like, the idea of, guys, let's get off the ship and talk privately because we are trying to judge this computer in front of it. That's, you know,
there's a reason that the defendant isn't present in the jury room.
It makes me think of 2001 A Space Odyssey, where they have to talk about killing Hal, so they go inside the thing, but they don't know that Hal can read their lips.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing it right there.
Careful, but not careful enough.
And David Cronenberg's character has a good response as to why he's doing it like this. And I don't say that's invalid, but what Paul's saying wasn't wrong either. But the way he comes in, where it's almost like it's a joke. Well, no. Is that a joke? When he does that, when he does that whole spiel, is it funny?
I think we're meant to be laughing at him a little bit.
Because it's low random?
Yeah, but it's also like, yeah, you silly Paul, that's not going to work. You don't need to do that.
See, I think it's funny because what the hell are you talking about, Paul? Like, why do you want a hug? That's weird. And the characters give those looks to each other of like, this is weird. And then David Cronenberg's like, music off. Whoa. I think the humor comes from that rather than the humor of Paul. The reactions and the what the fuck is happening nature rather than the laughter coming from Paul. That's silly. You think that would work? Because they played that so earnestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got another question for you, but this isn't hypothetical. This is to this story. Is Gray the main character of it, technically? Because the episode ends like Gray had this amazing growth and arc from it. Hence, they leave the show.
Okay. I didn't see it that way. But I get that.
Okay, I mean,
I get that that could be a thing. I don't think it really is, but you know,
it's just they treat it like Gray helps Zora make a decision and then sees Trill and they're awed, and then we have a whole scene of Gray and Adira talking about, like, Gray, you did so great there, and you've lit up because you saw your Trill homeworld, and you have to go back, and...
I just saw it as, like, they're setting up that Gray wants to, you know, do the Guardian training / is doing it.
That Gray needs to leave.
It makes sense that they need to return to Trill to work on this training a little bit more. And I'm also like, well, you're not doing anything here. You are not a part of the crew.
Yeah, you just came back to life and now you're leaving. What really? Again, this isn't even a Star Trek thing. This is a writing 101 thing. Guys, listen up. Writer's Room of Discovery, learn this for next season, okay? I mean, you've failed at this consistently. So I don't think you're listening. You did this with Arium, you know? You keep doing this. You keep doing this. When a character has to leave, you did this with Tilly. When a character has to leave, whether they die or they just leave the show, or they're taking a vacation away or whatever the case may be, make them the focus. Make them the focus. It's as simple as that. Even if the audience knows what the ending result is, it still makes us care. We just watched Battlestar Galactica. There was a whole episode about Kat. Was that her name? Kat, whichever one, was the pilot. And you got a whole episode about her. Great. And that's, you know, spoiler, that's the last episode with that character. And guess what? After that, I actually cared about her when we saw pictures of her and people talk about her because we spent a whole episode with her and got to know her before she got to leave that series, that show. Here, Gray, I've known nothing about this character. I could not tell you a single thing about them as a person. I could tell you what race they are, why they've got this career path, and that they're in a relationship with another character. Couldn't tell you anything else about them. Oh, they're nice. That's it. Like, they are as equal to Hugh to me in terms of just existence.
I was trying to come up with a counter thing to that. And then I was like, oh, no, wait, the game is part of the Trill stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, wait, that's linked to the Guardian stuff. Oh, that's linked to their relationship. Oh, fuck, there's really? There's really not anything there. And the more I try and dig, the more I realize that there's nothing there. And that I'm disappointed. Again, somehow.
But Gray is gone. They leave at the end of this. They're going back to Trill. If this B story was following Gray and Gray's a synth siding with the AI, and what does that mean? And then it challenges them of why they're here and what their journey is, and then they decide they have to leave? That's something!
It could have been something. It could have been a contender. But it's just a bum.
Gray is a great example of a non-character. Because how would... Okay, I can give you a character from another Star Trek show and ask you, how would they interact with another character and then another character? And you would be able to tell me, Bones would talk to Jim like this, but he wouldn't talk to Spock like that. Or Janeway would talk to Tuvok like this, but would never, ever talk to Neelix like that. Could you do the same with Gray? How would Gray talk to Burnham? How would Gray talk to Burnham? That's any different to how they talk to Adira. How would Gray talk to Zora? That's any different to Paul. There is none. Because Gray is just nice. That's it.
I don't know how much of a difference there is between the way that any of the characters talk to any of the characters. Paul talks to Hugh the same way that he talks to Burnham.
I know that this is going to, and I'm not trying to counter it, but we had someone. Their name was Tilly, and she's gone now. Tilly was actually good like that. Tilly talked to Burnham in a different way than she talked to Paul and Saru.
Yep.
In a different way than she talked to Hugh.
That's true.
For all the faults we had with Tilly as a character, she was good like that. She and that actress allowed that to happen. And Saru is also good like that to an extent, but she was better at it than him. But his character by design is socially awkward. Mm-hmm. But Gray is...
He gives a plant this episode.
Oh, yeah.
The budding romance continues.
Budding? Did you do that on purpose? Because it's a budding plant?
You'll never know.
I'll never know. Gray is gone. And
Gray's gone. Bye bye. Time for the Hugh doll.
Well, just before, because this is probably the last time we'll ever talk about Gray, other than when Adira may reference them in lines of dialogue. Why? Why did they bother?
Because they had an idea at one point.
Did they?
They had an idea for what Gray was.
What?
Not what Gray is.
Okay, what was Gray?
The hallucination of a Trill host?
For what purpose?
I didn't say there was a purpose. I just said there was an idea.
Why did they want that idea?
The idea was, oh, we could do this. That's it.
Why?
That's it.
Why bother creating a whole new character for it then?
Why bother doing Ryan. There's no point for fucking any of it.
And that's what's maddening about it. It is truly maddening that they make this whole character and don't do anything with them. They promise that they'll do something with them. All of the publicity, all of the advertising, all of the interviews, and the show within itself looks you in the eye and says, Grey will be a character, and then they aren't.
No, and it just feels like they didn't want to kill them because they didn't want to do Barry.
That's how we intro'd them with their death. They already buried the gays.
Kill them again. One death per queer character.
I know that
you're... Or queer couple?
Yeah, I know that you're... You know, you're right. There is no point, but I just... I don't know... Like, I know that there's no point, but I just... I scratch my eyes out going, why would they do this? Why do they put in the effort? Why do they hire this person? Why do they waste their own time as well as my time with a non-entity? When Voyager...
Maybe they think that this is a character. We spend time with them. They say lines.
Yeah.
Maybe that's enough for them to think, oh, yeah, we've done a really great job with this representation and developing a fully-fledged character.
Are they the Mayweather and the Harry Kim of the modern age, where you, in a way, don't even know why the writers thought they needed this character, but they're there anyway to take up space and say some lines of dialogue? Like, what's the difference between Grey and Harry Kim and Mayweather other than Grey is in it much less?
How'd you know I didn't want to wait?
The way you looked earlier, the way you lit up at the sight of Trill, the way you're all lit up right now. This is something you need to do. Go home. Train with Guardian Z.
Come with me.
Discovery's my home.
Talking about a character that totally needs to be here, it's time for the Hugh Darnell, Rachel, where we talk about Dr. Hugh Colbert. And he was here. And
he smiles and he nods.
I had one question in mind when watching him throughout the whole episode, which is, why are you here? And as soon as I was about to say it out loud to you, he walked forward, literally into a spotlight, into the scene, and proceeded to say lines of dialogue that justified why he was here, which is he had a medical and psychological opinion on the fact that Zora has dreams. And then he took a step back, and that was it.
Yep. Hugh is here for the Zora plotline. Tries to advise Stamets to make less of a fool of himself at various points. He smiles and nods.
He literally smiled. They had a reaction shot of him smiling and a quiet nod. We aren't joking when we say that. All he does in episodes is smile and nod. Like,
that's the majority of what that actor gets paid to do. And I say work it.
Work it. Work it. Why not? Fuck it.
Please donate some of your money.
To the smiling campaign. Is there anything else he does?
Well, I'm pretty sure that there is a charity that has Smile in the name that does a lot of work with kids who have cleft palates.
Okay, sure.
So, there you go. Cruz?
Yeah. Yeah. Does he do anything else?
No.
Do we learn anything about him?
No.
Does he contribute anything?
No.
Other than to be an emotional support for Paul and an extension of Paul and all these things we were told that he would no longer be after season one.
Remember, he's having a slight mental breakdown in the background of this.
He acts like a father figure to Grey, who's now leaving.
Yeah.
Do you remember all those scenes?
They're kids, remember?
Do you remember all those scenes those characters had that really made us, the audience, understand that found family dynamic at play?
Yeah, it was before Grey got a body, remember?
Oh, it was in those 5 months. How could I forget?
Oh, my God.
Hey, did you know Adir is an art genius? I just wanted to remind you of that. I'm sure it will come into play ever.
Yeah. Is that all for the Hudah, my love?
One last statement for the Hudah.
I need to remind you that you are my love.
You are my love, my sunshine. One last statement, and this isn't me being facetious.
What a prelude.
Grudge has been a better defined character than Grey and Hugh.
She's a queen.
The fucking cat has had more.
She's got some character growth happening. She doesn't hate Burnham as much.
Mm.
She's left with Burnham, and we know why that's a big deal for both
Burnham, Brooke, and
Burnham
the cat.
And Grudge. We understand their dynamics as a triad. Fucking hell.
And with Grudge, one thing, Burnham, the cat isn't going to play with the toy because it's a fucking hologram, you idiots.
She hates holograms.
She hates holograms. Did you not learn this? She's twinkling this cat toy and then she's like, oh, deactivates it and it's gone like it's a hologram. And I rolled my eyes going, oh, Michael, do you not remember? Grudge doesn't like holograms. Can't sense them. Can't smell them. Can't feel the real texture of them, you dum-dum.
So, of course, she isn't going to want to play with it.
I'm assuming it's a hologram. It didn't look like programmable matter. She made it disappear with space magic. That's it. That's a Hudah. What do I rate this?
Impervious system of yum equals bad. Yum yum equals good.
So, what do you rate...
I asked you first.
But to connect. I've had, even though you may not believe this, I had a lot of fun talking about it. And I did not feel angry or disgusted when watching it. It was probably the most competently put together in both direction and writing.
I didn't get dizzy.
I didn't get dizzy.
I liked that.
There was no pointless
action. No sparks.
There
no
was no pointless
no
action.
Throwers.
But yeah, there's no pointless action. No sparks, no flamethrowers. You're right. So with all that piled together, I'm giving it a yum.
Yum.
This episode is not good enough. Even for Discovery's standards, this episode being competent isn't good enough. It needs to be better than competent. We're 4 seasons in. We've seen them be better than competent before. Even if they've failed harder, I need more than this. This is a yum. Rachel.
It's a yum from me.
Yum.
I am so keen to hear about what we'll be watching next time on Star Trek Discovery. And I want to stress, this was one of the higher rated episodes of the season.
5.7.
Ish. Higher. What are we watching next?
All In.
Okay. That's just the title, All In?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Following a hunch, Captain Burnham tracks Book to an old haunt from their courier days and gets drawn into a high-stakes competition for a powerful weapon. It's the boxing episode, baby.
And it's a poker episode, too.
Whoop, whoop.
Oh, I have opinions
Every
on this.
Every show needs a boxing episode. Everybody, box.
Boxy, one of the first YouTubers to get doxxed. I have opinions on the episode, and I cannot wait to share them next time. People, you can follow us on your social media platforms of choice under Yum Yum Pod or Yum Yum Podcast. We post on there regularly about Babylon 5 and Star Trek Discovery. So follow us if you want to engage, as well as you can email us over at yumyumpod@gmail.com. If you are looking for people talking about Babylon 5, we do post on this as well, discussions of that show from the rewatch perspective. So check it out if you are interested in that series. as well. We have our Patreon, in which we have a lot of bonus content and perks. If you join up, you get to be a part of a group Discord where you get to talk to us and fellow Yumlings. We are going through a lot of things, the X-Men movies, the Star Trek movies. We've talked about the best and worst rated episodes of Star Trek, as well as we are currently watching Space Above and Beyond. Rachel, for the first time, me, this is a rewatch. So if you have not seen Space Above and Beyond before, but you want to learn more about it, maybe have a reason to watch that series and have a podcast companion to it, join our Patreon where you get to hear us go through Space Above and Beyond, the example of a hidden gem cult classic science fiction show. And that is all we've got. If you have not already lifted up your finger and pressed it onto the button that gives a 5-star rating and or review on your podcast host of site of choice,
or at least a follow.
Or at least a follow, or at least a subscribe. You're a fool and you should do it now, okay? Again, everything's in the description of this episode for you to do all of that. Rachel, I had a pleasure talking to you today about Star Trek Discovery.
I wish I could say the same.
I felt so much at ease not having to talk about stormy weather this week and talking about something that wasn't that. And that's what I've got to say. What was the yum-yum moment? We forgot about the yum-yum moment. What was the bizarre head-scratcher yum-yum moment for you? Was there any? Is it Paul playing the music and demanding a group hug? I think that's the closest. Everything else was relatively tame. I'm really struggling. Struggling so hard, I'm saying it like struggling, not struggling.
Oh.
I know.
We didn't bring up Brooke's pronunciation of irreparable.
Yeah, he said, instead of irreparable, he said irreparable. Yeah, you know, that's a yum-yum moment. There you go.